The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis.
Hey, we're back, everybody. Alan Ellis here with Robin, and we're talking about fishing and hunting in the great outdoors. And one of the topics is the Conowingo Dam, was brought up by a couple of callers here earlier, first hour. And I mentioned that I thought I saw that the governor had done something recently about that. And sure enough, on July 7th, less than a month ago, the governor held the first Conowingo Dam summit. And Robin searched it out for us. What did you just Google? Hogan, Conowingo, and that was it? And the governor's website comes up. And, you know, it's a press release from the 7th of July. And he brought together all the agencies. And basically says it's a multi-agency work group. And there's a request for information. That says, let's see, where do I want to put this? They want to seek innovation solutions for reducing pollution that threaten the Chesapeake Bay. Hogan administration also announced a formal request for information to help find solutions and determine if dredging of the Conowingo Dam and reuse of dredge material can be done in an efficient and effective way. Well, you know, you're talking about a body of water that's 100 feet deep and 30 feet down. You'll find the rest of it as a loose soil known as sludge, which is basically totally, saturated dirt, you know, mud, basically. And how do you collect it? How do you collect it? Do you put a dredge and a crane in there with a bucket? Do you suck it out with some type of a, you know, vacuum system? How do you get it out of there? Okay. Complicating that is that layer of trash over top, and God knows how deep that is. I mean, Robin, you've seen that a couple times in the corners of the Conowingo pool up there. So you got to get rid of that first, I would assume, and that probably could be dredged out somehow. And then to get all that while the water and the current is moving and you have no idea when the gates are going to open, you know, you've really got to coordinate your effort on that deal. But, you know, it has become it was never a problem that was solved when it could have been solved in early on. And now it's at basically an emergency stage. And unfortunately, that's a lot of times how government works. You don't take care of the problem and solve it up front because of cost, because everything's on a bid, you know, and then you make a deal with the devil like Exelon. And, you know, well, we'll continue to operate the fish ladder. We just won't give you a, you know, the fish scoop. We just won't build a fish ladder so the shad can get upstream. We won't make that accessible to the shad. We'll keep lifting them up over the top at our expense. Well, you know, all these Band-Aid solutions, you know. Maryland said, we want the fish. We want the fish ladders. Exelon says, we'll give you more money. You know, hey, how do you win? How do you win in a situation when you've got big business and government working hand in hand? Now, there's a good combination. A lot of innovative minds at work there, that's for sure. So, yeah, it's going to take some money. He brought together, you know, all the groups. third year into his administration, election year's next year. Who knows? There doesn't seem to be a time. Oh, wait. Hold on. Meeting was July. Okay. So the group is seeking ideas on how dredging the Conowingo Dam and beneficial reuses of dredged material can be accomplished in the most economically and technically feasible way possible. The request is expected to be formally issued in September. So, all you civil engineers out there, all you mechanical engineers out there, all you electrical engineers out there, all you hydro engineers out there, put your little thinking caps on. Go meet privately. Form a business. Put your ideas together. And when the request for information goes out in September, you can walk in there with a plan. And even if you have a plan and it's signed off on and it's funded and everything else, likely they'll find some way to screw it up.
Yeah, you're right.
If it's efficient. Oh, I can tell you. There was a plan to address the manure situation. 10 years. 10 years.
Sorry.
No, the chicken manure.
I know. I was thinking it about
10 years. No, we're not going there. Anyway, 10 years in the works. Funding was done. Everything was done. All we needed was a governor sign off on it, and it was recommended back for study. Gone.
It was 10 years ago started?
At least 10 years ago.
But when did it go to the governor?
Last year.
Okay.
Last year. Yep. All the principals, everybody involved, the industries, everything was good to go, and they're killed in the machinations of politics. A lot of stuff does, unfortunately. So, and look, you know, these guys are doing what they do as far as governing a state that's diverse as Maryland, you know. And there's priorities, of course. There's taxes. There's crime. There's education. There's all the same old. When it comes to
there's lots of manure.
Natural resources. Well, when it comes to natural resources and the environment, you know, it's good to make. What'd you just say?
Nothing.
Are you talking about this show specifically?
No.
What are you trying to say? Say it out.
All the manure.
Yeah, what about it? There's plenty of it.
Yeah.
Oh, in politics.
You know how I feel about politics.
I know how you feel about politics. You know, I'm somewhat involved in politics.
I mean,
almost on a daily basis.
And I use.
And I've sent two letters in the last week, okay, to politicians and the administration and that type of thing. You know, recommendations from the Maryland Hunting Coalition, making the chairman of one of the committees, House of Delegates committee, chair people, you know, made them aware of certain situations in the outdoors and that type of thing. I mean, I'm that involved.
I know.
Now in politics. And you know what I'm doing.
I used my stepson's quote.
Yeah?
I tolerate you.
Oh, you tolerate that part of it?
That part of you.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah,
they have to understand. I dealt with that for a long time with my dad. And what I do, I'm going to marry somebody who's in the middle of it, too. Not as bad as he was, but.
No, your dad was secretary of DNR. He was right hand. I mean, he was top of the top of the administration.
Yeah, but he started as a delegate and all that stuff.
Oh, I know he did.
Went through the whole.
Yeah, I know. Sure. That's what happens. Anyway, after the show, when we were talking about the decline of Spot, we talked to Uncle Dale.
Uncle Dale?
Yep. Last week. And I'm trying to bait him to call in to tell us what he thinks the situation with the lack of Spot this year might be. He has some very interesting takes on this, too.
If Dale is more intelligent than me, he's listening to the rain in bed, snoring.
Hey, you volunteered.
I would never let you go out in that rain without me, but I'm just having this heart. Nothing against anybody. Everybody's being so nice out here, but.
What?
If I start snoring, please hit me.
Oh, if you start snoring, we'll just cut your mic off. Jill in Kent Island.
Hi.
What's up?
This Chesapeake Bay restoration fee that everybody pays $15 on their sewer bill.
Yeah.
That's a slush fund, isn't it?
Yep.
And it just, you know, there's a whole lot that could be done with that. And I live in a small community of 28 units. And each one of us pays $15 every 3 months.
Yep.
For the slush fund.
Yep.
But nobody seems to find out where it's going, and I don't care. They say it's the chicken farmers. It's not the chicken farmers. It's opening those stupid dams when they get too full instead of opening them when they should be open to alleviate some of the pressure. That would help our Chesapeake Bay a lot.
I don't think it's quite as simple as that, given the fact that they've been allowed to get all that stuff behind them. There's 70 feet of silt. Which gate do you open? It's sludge. It's mud.
But it seems to me like whenever it hits a flood stage,
yeah,
that's when they open them up full force.
Well, yeah.
Sludge comes down. And if they would open them up a little bit before, even a little bit before that, it would control that flood stage.
What is the Conowingo Dam? What's the purpose of the Conowingo Dam?
Electricity, I assume.
Right. So if you only need X gallons per hour to generate all the electricity that people are using, why would you waste your resource?
Because it's poisoning our Chesapeake Bay when you do it the other way.
Oh, that's not business.
Oh.
That's not effective business.
Excuse me.
It's not economical to do that. Why would you waste that resource when you can hold it back there? And then when you need a little bit, you just let it go and turn the turbines and you generate the electricity and then you sell it and then you're good to go.
You sound like a politician.
No, I sound like a realist. I'm not a politician. You know, if I were a politician, I would say something like what I quoted you. We need to work together to address this situation that faces all the residents of the Chesapeake Bay and its tributaries.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Jill. Adios. All right. We're going to change the subject. I don't know where she went.
Yeah.
She said, thank you. Like the wild goose in winter, as the Johnny Cash song says. I'll be as gone as the wild goose in winter. Understand your man. Maybe you ought to listen to that. Dale and Easton, good morning. How are you?
Dale, you can take him back.
An interesting conversation. How much of it is based in fact? That's the problem.
Is this a harbinger of things to come?
It's possible. Who knows?
But to Ms. Robbins' point, they have at times now, if they're expecting a big slug of water, they will draw that pond down.
Sure.
They've done that in the past, but you're right. Every drop of water is precious to them because it's cha-ching.
Yeah, ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. So, that's right. You're absolutely right. I mean, you know.
Anyway.
That's how it works. You don't kill the goose that laid the golden egg.
That's right. That's right. So. But we had talked about the spot situation.
Yeah.
The gentleman called in last week, and Alan, you know, they can certainly be overfished. Anything can be overfished. The problem with the other situation with spot is the fact that we're on the northern extent of their range, and they're very susceptible to, you know, temperature fluctuations,
right,
particularly during the winter. They spawn in the ocean and the young drift in. And if we have cold temperatures, winter kills are not uncommon.
Right.
For spot and croaker.
Okay.
And even sea trout. So it's not just over harvesting that could be causing the problem. It could be other environmental factors also. Plus the fact your class strength varies from year to year, just like it does with any other fish. So it's a combination of factors.
Uh-huh.
Again, I'm not saying that they're not being over harvested, but one other thing too that the gentleman mentioned, spot, they grow fairly fast. They're not a slow growing fish. They don't grow as slow as say white perch do. So they can be of legal size in 2-3 years,
mm-hmm.
well, big enough to catch and eat. So
mm-hmm.
it's not like they, you know, their growth is slow.
Right.
And depending on conditions in the bay, some years they grow faster than others. So it's not. I mean, you can regulate harvest, which has been attempted with you know, trying to manage the spot pot situation.
Right.
But again, there's you can't control Mother Nature. If we would happen to have a big winter kill, that's very, very detrimental to the overall population.
Mm-hmm.
So
there are people who trap spot, you know, on a regular basis.
Oh, certainly.
For commercial purposes.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
And I mean, you know, we've got people in New Jersey that trap spot and sell them here in Maryland for bait,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I just, you know, I've fished with them. I like live lining personally. It's a very effective, it's more fun than chumming, although the action isn't as fast, but it's a lot more fun in my
mm-hmm.
estimation. You
it
know,
is.
you gotta let that fish take that bait and that type of thing. And I mean, I've caught sea trout live line, and I've caught bluefish live line, and I've caught rockfish live line, and it's just a lot of fun fishing with the bait, you know.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's in effect or not, but ASMFC had been thinking about having management plans drawn up, coastwide management plans for spot. I don't know whether they have mandated it or not, but it would be interesting if they have to get a hold of Maryland's plan and see how it see how they regulate the fishery.
Interesting.
So I don't know whether it was ever came to fruition or not. They were talking about it just before I left. So.
Right, right.
So
well, I have my main researcher here. If she decides that she wants to get off Facebook, and
I'm not on Facebook. What do you want me to look up?
Have you been paying attention?
Yeah, you're talking about spot.
Yeah, Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, ASMFC, spot plan. ASMFC, spot plan. Got it? This is nice having a live researcher.
I was going to say, you've...
He's come up a lot.
I've come up a lot in the world rather than try and do it by Google on my break.
Yeah.
So,
that's all.
Anything?
Yep. It's on my way to you.
Oh, okay. She's sending it to me. So
hopefully, you know, Miss Robin, you'll be compensated for your time and effort.
I think the fact that he went and sat 3 hours with me in a bridal, I got paid.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Comp time.
But anyway, Alan, it's just
overtime.
It's a situation that's not. I mean, it's not
like anything else.
Do, but I mean, we can certainly can control a fishery in terms of with harvest and things like that. But when you've got these other factors involved, and particularly since spot is a is not a species that stays in the bay all the time, it's up and down the coast. When you have other players involved, it becomes a lot more complicated.
Right. Exactly. Well, as far as I'm concerned, you know, a wild fish that is caught for commerce, you know, commercial fishery and a recreational fishery is very tough to manage.
Yes, it is.
Okay, because you've got cheaters and you've got people that have different demands and different expectations, okay?
Right.
Oh, man. Okay.
Not like crabs that are easy to manage.
Crabs are easy to manage. The only fishery that you can really reasonably manage, if you think about it, is your put and take trout fishing.
Yep, that's right.
You raise enough of them, you stock them, and you hope you'll never see any of them again, ever.
Yep. Yeah,
because they're not going to spawn.
Done.
Huh?
When you're done, you're done.
When you're done, you're done. Yeah. So freshwater trout, that's an easy species to manage. Everything else, pretty complicated.
So anyway, Alan, that's my 2 cents on the spot.
All right, I appreciate that. Now, we're going to Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. There's the life history of the spot, and is there a management plan? I don't know. Dale, give me a minute. I'll get back to you shortly.
Okay, Alan.
Thanks, man. See you. Bye-bye.
All right, see you.
All right. Wow, there's a whole big thing on spot. Look at that. And The population has been down recently since 2011. Through 2016, work continued on the first coastwide benchmark stock assessment for spot. The assessment seeks to estimate population parameters, stock status, natural mortality, discard rates, and mortality, and supposed to go under review in 2017. And then they have had, if you want to read that, I can send you the website. It is ASMFC.org, Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission.org, /species/spot. And you can read all about it. And there are all types of fisheries management plans there. Atlantic herring, Atlantic croaker, Atlantic menhaden, Atlantic striped bass, Atlantic sturgeon, black drum, American eel, American lobster, all that. And here it is for spot. So I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to tell you that there is a lot of stuff online if you want to read it, more so than what we have available here. Maybe we can get somebody to talk about spot and yellow or white perch and that type of thing, croaker and all that good stuff. We'll see. 410 WCBM 680. Where's our callers? 410 WCBM 680 is our phone number, 922-6680. I know where they are. They're all listening to the rain patter on the roof and keep them asleep. Right?
I'm telling you.
Huh?
And that makes me sleep better than I slept better in those few hours last night than I've slept in 2 weeks.
I know you have. I know you did. All right. Clyde Sport Shop. If you're going crabbing once the water goes down, if you're going fishing, and you need bait, or you need any kind of, you know, crab trap, crab pot, trot line, bait, seasoning, steamer, you name it, Clyde's has it for crabbing. Same way with fishing, any kind of trolling. You got chum. I was there the other day when they were buying chum. We bought a bunch of chum logs, you know, for people to, frozen chum, for the people to take out and put in their chum bag, and that type of thing. I was there when that happened. And, you know, it, with hunting season right around the corner, I know they're stocking up. I mean, they've got the great Browning firearms for, you know, shotgun sports and shooting sports. And, you know, they've got the great A5 and the A-bolts. There's a AB3 out there, a new one now with a synthetic stock with a great scope on it, Nikon scope. It's a great rifle combo in a lot of different calibers, and we'll talk more about that as we get a little closer to hunting season. They got the dove and clay loads for $5.95 a box if you want to stock up for dove season coming up here in a month or so. Anyway, why not stop by? Visit the website, ClydeSports.com, or call them, 410-242-6108. If you're looking for anything, rod and reel repair, gun repair, scope mounting, bore sighting, why not? 242-6108 is the phone number. 247-3474. 247-FISH is the 24-hour fishing hotline. Clyde's Sport Shop. This is Alan Ellis for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex spray-on bedliners. Linex spray-on bedliners are rated number one and carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, crabbing, and hunting gear can't hurt it. Choose the Linex Premium or the Linex Extra. Both look great. Bay Linex and Catonsville Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, you get it. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex bedliner and truck gear accessories. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. 410-789-0199. 410-789-0199. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford. 410-455-0800. 410-455-0800. Linex.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built their reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Here's a very brief message from Papa John's. Come and see us to get your corn, your tomatoes, your watermelons, and your cantaloupes. Summer's time for picnics and family get-togethers, reunions, and going camping. Summer's corn on the cob and fresh tomatoes and cold, juicy cantaloupes and watermelons. Schillinger family at Papa John's, they would like to tell you that they have their own super sweet corn, their own homegrown tomatoes, and they're ready to go right now at their big old produce barn. If you enjoy your time outdoors with great taste and food, head down there to Schillinger's Papa John's Farm in Severn. Again, tasty, super sweet corn, homegrown tomatoes, or squash, zucchini, peppers, onions, green beans, cucumbers, cantaloupes, sweet watermelons, all the squash. They even have herbs for you if you want. Papa John's, located off I-97, exit 12, 8065, New Cut Road in Severn. That phone number, 410-969-8810. Papa John's Farm is open every day, Monday to Saturday from 9 to 7, Sunday 9 to 6. That phone number again. Get a big old pile of corn for your reunion, your church picnic, or whatever. 410-969-8810. Visit Schillinger's Papa John's Farm. It'll grow on you. For great fishing tackle, crabbing supplies, and up-to-date fishing and crabbing information, I recommend Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. To get there, take Route 100 to the end. Hop on Mountain Road towards Gibson Island. Go 2.5 miles to 4729 Mountain Road. All you need for any type of fishing, crabbing, and the best fishing report on the Mid-Bay. Fishbones also carries the best stainless steel crab steamers you'll ever find. Call 410-360-0573, 410-360-0573 for Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Your hands start shaking, your heart gets to pumping, your knees get to knocking, and your mind starts racing. It's a feeling like you never felt before. Have you coming back for more? But fever, gonna get you, boy. But fever, have you praying to the Lord. That rat, that grunt, that stare, that stomp will make
buck fever. I get it every time I drive down the highway, don't I, babe?
Yes, you do.
Yep. Man, I'll tell you what, those bachelor bucks.
There have been some nice-looking ones this year. So
there's some bachelor buck groups out there that are just amazing. Amazing. What are bachelor bucks? Well, this time of year in the deer season, in the deer's life this time of year, it goes like this. The does are dropping their fawns late now, but for the most part, those fawns have pretty much all been dropped. I mean, it's a 7-month gestation period for those, 200 days for the fawns. And the bulk of the breeding cycle is the first 15 days of November. So 200 days from the 1st through the 15th of November, that gives you the fawning season. It's heavy for 2 weeks, but it's sporadic for, you know, a month before and a month after and even later than that, because some of those are bred as, you know, as yearlings themselves at 6 months of age. They're capable of breeding. So, you know, a fawn that's dropped in May can breed in December, January, and some of them do. So anyway, in this stage of a deer's life cycle, though, you've got the antlers that are growing. And Robin watched a video on YouTube the other day about antler growth.
Pretty, well, that was really neat.
Pretty amazing.
I could not believe.
Yeah, they took photos of the deer. I mean, videos of the deer at various stages from May through, you know,
October
when it went from just nubs on its head all the way to hard antlers in October. And the growth rate in a deer antler is the most amazing thing you ever want to see. They grow those racks every year, as does a caribou, as does a moose, as does an elk. So imagine that amount of bone forming in just a few months.
It absolutely blew me away.
It is. It's amazing. That material, that velvet, basically protects those antlers from insects and so forth. And it's a thick layer, it's a membrane that covers three main blood vessels that flow through the antlers. And if you look at a set of antlers, you can see these blood vessel marks in hard antler. Okay. Anyway, the antlers are growing. So the deer are not competing with each other right now, the bucks. There's no competition for mating or territory or anything, so they all hang out together. And when you see one, you'll see three, four, five, eight, 10 maybe bucks in one field. So the bucks are hanging together, the does are with their fawns. Now, in a month's time, that's all going to start to change because the testosterone level in white-tailed deer starts to rise in late August, early September. The racks are done growing, the antlers are done growing, they're starting to harden into bone, and you know, they start to rub off that outer layer. Sometimes they eat it. Sometimes they just, you know, strip it off, and you'll find it sometimes in the early bow season, you'll see deer with strips of velvet hanging off their antlers.
Oh, they almost look like they're leprosy.
Leprosy, yeah. Some of them do, sure. But it's interesting. So, you know, the bucks are all hanging together and the does are hanging with their fawns. And that's pretty much the way it is right now. Occasionally you'll see them mix, but those bachelor bucks are what gets me excited when I see them in the field. One of them pops her head up and there's a big 8 or 10 point rack. You can tell what it's going to be already. So anyway, what should you be doing now to prepare for deer season? That's a good topic. I like that. I would be practicing with my bow, what I would be doing. I'd make sure if I got a crossbow, I'd make sure it would be sighted in perfectly. Practice with it. Practice at different ranges. If you've got something with an adjustable telescopic sight on your crossbow, make sure you know where to set it for each different setting. And don't try and extend the range of your crossbow just because it has a stock and a scope on it. It's not a rifle. It's only good out to a certain range. The kinetic energy is only good as much as a bow, a standard compound bow. Now, if you're a traditional bow shooter, a recurve or longbow, you really want to be practicing because that is more of an acquired skill than holding a compound bow up and, you know, looking through the sight pins. But that recurve, you know, without sights, is all pretty much instinctive. So you really, really better be practicing with that. As far as bow and rifle, muzzle loader, you better be sighting the rifles in. You better be sighting the muzzle loaders in. You better be figuring out which load of combination of powder and ignition system and bullet works best in your muzzle loader. You know, you may have to buy 3 or 4 different types of muzzle loader bullets and shoot them to see which one shoots the best. If you have a new muzzle loader that you haven't shot and you want to basically get it on paper instead of buying, you know, $2-3, you know, projectile bullets, you know, Sabot bullets, go out there and use patch round ball. Go get a box of 50 caliber round balls and some pre-lubricated patches and use your powder and patch round ball, and at least it'll get you somewhere where you need to be, and then dial it in tight with your load. Remember, the lighter the load, the faster the bullet. It's going to go out of your muzzle loader, but your kinetic energy is what you have to worry about with that. Again, you don't want to try and stretch a muzzle loader out to 200, 300 yards. It can be done with some muzzle loaders, and the new Remington available at Clyde's can go do 200 yards. But quite frankly, I don't think I've ever taken a shot with a muzzle loader more than 75 yards. Laura did. Laura killed one at 110. Not that was her first one with a muzzle loader and killed it dead. I mean, it was, but we had it ranged. She had a good rest. You know, she knew where the gun was shooting. It was right on at 100. And I said, that's 110 yards, you know, right there. And she nailed it. Big, great big doe in the snow. It was fun. Laura's birthday was yesterday, by the way.
Yes, it was. I wished you happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Laura. So, anyway, to get ready for bow season, rifle season, that's what I'd be doing. I'd also be checking my arrows, okay? Word of advice from Len down at Macrotech, don't shoot groups. Get a target. Get the targets. You know, if you're going to shoot a target butt or one of those targets for your backyard, shoot different arrows at different spots to check your accuracy. Shooting a group tells you one thing. You're both shooting all in the same place. But if you nick a carbon arrow with a field point, you may not see that crack. And the next time you shoot that carbon arrow, you may have a very, very bad explosion that, you know, in your hand. And you don't want that to happen. When you release that string on a fractured arrow, even with a hairline crack, it's not going to be pretty. So don't shoot groups. Okay? Pick out the corners. You know, put one in the center, aim for the center, aim at the top, aim at the right target, aim at the left target, aim at the bottom target. You know, just shoot all over. And if your arrows are shooting where you're pointing them, where you're, you know, where you're putting the sight pin, you're doing good. You're doing good. You don't have to shoot a 2-inch group. Okay? Just a couple tips. What else do you need to know? Make sure your clothing doesn't interfere with your string. Make sure your strings and your cables are all waxed the way they should be. Beeswax is a wonderful thing. You need to wax those cables and strings really often, and especially with a crossbow. Make sure the rail is lubricated on the crossbow after every time you shoot it. Make sure you lube that rail. Okay? Make sure your broadheads are sharp. If you have, you know, fixed broadheads, make sure they're sharp. If you use mechanical broadheads, make sure they're all in working order. If you have sight knocks or, lighted knocks on your arrows, make sure they're working. Turn them on, turn them off. Shoot them a couple times if you want. Turn them off. Learn how they work. Learn how they operate. Make sure all your feathers are in good repair. Your vanes are all in good repair. Go to your local bow shop. Have them check out your bow. Make sure there's no cracked limbs or anything like that. So that's it. All right. Let's see. Stony Beach Boardwalk, the morning after. Wind was really whooping here, and it's calming down some. And this is from Captain Dawn. And what kind of picture do we have here? Can't see it. Oh, my gosh, what a big picture. Oh, it's a movie. Oh, okay, can't read it on the house computer. I'll send it to Robin. You can see it. Okay. Forward. Who do we got? Paul in Ferndale. Hey, Paul, what's going on, brother?
Not much. Just out here trying to stay dry.
Good luck with that, huh?
Yeah.
What's it doing out there now?
What's it doing?
It's windy as all get out. It's not raining anymore, but it's windy.
Yep. Where are you at? Severna Park or somewhere down that way?
Well, it's in Glen Burnie on over by Hospital Drive.
I got it. Okay. Know where you are. Sure.
But you didn't let me say good morning to Robin and good morning, Alan.
You can say good morning all you want. Go
good
ahead.
Good morning, Paul.
My question is, does Schillinger's sell corn for deer?
You know, I believe they do. I think one of the sons started that last year or 2 years ago. But the best thing to do is check with them. I would.
Okay.
You know, I would.
Yep.
So
I know right where they are. It's not too far from my house. So.
Yep. Gotcha. We'll give them a call or stop by and see what they have to say.
All right. And the other question I have, I just thought of, is you have a Savage 220, right?
I do not, but I have the coalition has given away a handful of them over the past couple of years. Why? What do you got?
No, I was just, my question is about the rounds to use in them.
Oh, you use a 20 or 12?
Well, I haven't bought it yet, but I'm going to get one this year, and I was thinking, I don't know which one to get, the 12 or the 20.
Well, the 20 is going to be just as effective as the 12. I'm going to venture to say it's a little less punishing than the 12 gauge as far as the recoil is concerned, because it's a fairly light slug gun.
Right.
I have been using for 20 years light field ammunition. I use it in my 20 gauge H&R. I use it in my 12 gauge, 870. And I have never been unsatisfied with the results of shooting a deer with a light field slug. They're a little heavier, but once they're sighted in, they're all there.
Okay, light field.
Light field, yep. And you can get a 2 3/4 or a 3-inch 20 gauge. And I've shot both. Matter of fact, when the 3-inch came out, I field tested them for the company. And
okay.
Reported back on what my findings were. 2 3/4. If you're shooting a deer under 50 yards, 2 3/4 inch is fine.
Right.
Now, I did kill a deer with a 20 gauge in my H&R. I killed a deer at 150 yards with that. A guy had shot this deer in the foot, and it came out and stood in the field, and I hit it 2 out of 3 shots. and got that deer. But the H&R is a good gun too. But if you buy that Savage 220, you will definitely be satisfied with the performance of that gun. And the key is, Paul, get some good optics. Okay. Get a Nikon or a Leupold or something and put on it. Some of the lower end scopes, yeah, they're effective, but you know, just invest a little bit more in the scope and you'll be very, very happy.
Okay, because I was reading some reviews on them and or like message boards, and they were saying that the 12 gauge one does, you know, is a little more punishing than the 20.
Yeah,
which
sure.
Is obvious. And it seemed like everybody was using a Remington ballistic tip or something.
Oh, in that, yeah, you can use a ballistic tip. You can use Remington copper, solid copper, if you want. And it's, okay. You know, they're very good. We did a test a couple of years ago in the quarterly. One of my former writers did a test, and the Remington copper solid and the light field were neck and neck, and I mean incremental differences.
Wow.
When it comes to first and second place. So, you know, light fields are good. Remington copper solids are a little more expensive, but they're also very good round.
I forgot those extra.
So, all right.
All right. And then one more question.
Yes, sir.
Do you have the quarterly, is it online that you can
yep.
go back and look at the old ones?
Just the last issue, just the spring issue and the summer issue up there now. Why? What do you need?
No, I mean, you just mentioned that. I was going to try to go back and read that article.
Which one?
The one you just mentioned about the...
No, you're not going to find that. That was probably second year we were in business.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yep. So, all right.
All right. Well, you guys have a great weekend and stay dry.
Thanks,
you
Paul.
You also.
Appreciate it. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There he goes. All right. Whoops.
We have a request for a song. Camo Preacher wants to hear Put Another Log on the Fire by Shel Silverstein.
I might be Throw Another Log on the Fire. So, we'll see. We'll see if you can find it, Chris. If you don't get it for this week, let's try and get that for next week. Because it is a pretty funny song, and Robin would greatly appreciate it.
I'm sure I would.
Throw another log on the fire, cook me up some bacon and some beans. Go out to the car and lift it up and change the tire.
I think I've heard that.
Wash my socks and sew my old blue jeans.
That part I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to hearing it again.
Fill my pipe and then go fetch my slippers. Boil me up another pot of tea. Sit here by my feet because I like you when you're sweet. And you know that it ain't feminine to fight. Oh, yeah. I know that song. I'm familiar.
I bet you do.
Uh-huh.
Did you get your other messages?
I did not. Let's see what we've got here. My phone has been with you. Oh, by the way, condolences to Chuck Spohr.
Chuck and his wife.
And his wife, Diane. Diane lost her father yesterday morning. We found out about that, so, you know.
Heartfelt condolences, and we're thinking about both of them.
Indeed. So I don't know if he's listening or not, so. But I would imagine he's not at this point, so. Anyway, thoughts and prayers for you, Chuck, and I'm sure our listeners are as well. Any luck on that? No? All right. We're going to take a little break. I want to tell you one more time about our buddies at Clyde Sports Shop. And I can't wait to write this article. This is very informative. The early years. You know?
Oh, yeah. 60 years. It's really interesting.
50s and 60s, you know. And
very, I know. I said in business 60 years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing. And
it is.
They've been there. I mean, how it started.
Well, it was 67 or, no, 68. They wrote a letter to Browning. And the store wasn't very big or very well organized. And the Browning rep showed up. And he was supposed to take pictures of the store. A fellow by the name of Chuck Jensen, who I knew. And Chuck unfortunately perished in a plane crash in North Carolina, I believe, a few years back. But Chuck was a member of the Olympic shooting team for trap and skeet.
Okay.
And he was the Browning rep. And he went in and he sent his recommendations to Browning, and Browning became a dealer, and the first thing they sent him was, back in those days, was five A5 shotguns. And Billy bought one of them, And they were just getting into waterfowling at that point. And every time they go hunting, they had different days off, they'd pass the A5 back and forth. And he still owned the gun. I got Billy with a picture of it. Now it's been been a new stock, a new barrel and all that, but the basic gun's still there. Anyway, Clyde's is located 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road. Over 60 years, their experience will help you in your selection of any fishing, crabbing, or hunting supplies that you might need. And they have all the services, too. Why not stop by and see them at Clyde Sports, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway exit number 9. Phone number 410-242-6108. Celebrating 60 years, their 24-hour fishing hotline is 247-347-4247-FISH. Clyde Sports Shop. Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie Spray-On Bedliners. Linex Spray-On Bedliners rated number 1, carry nationwide lifetime warranty. Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex Premium Bedliner or the Linex Extra. Both look great. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards. You get it. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner, truck gear and accessories. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford. 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Linex. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W. Tire and Auto.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
I live back in the woods, you see. A woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive.
Well, that was short and sweet, wasn't it? We got to get more of that song in there, that's for sure. We have to find that CD and make sure we do that. Anyway, time for one or two more calls if you want. 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. Robin wasn't here, and the streaming wasn't up when Fran called. She wondered where Fran was, so... That week it was streaming was gone, that's when Fran called.
Okay. So, I was just worried because I hadn't heard from her. Not been here.
We're all good.
Okay.
Yeah. She's good. Her and Chuck are good. And so.
Life is good.
Yeah. You know, so.
I stayed awake the whole 2 hours. I'm very happy.
Barely.
Yeah. I've got to admit, y'all.
Yeah. Thanks for doing the research, though.
That was my pleasure.
Good. That was good. So. Yeah, I'm getting emails now from our designer who's working on the next issue of the Hunting Quarterly. So the covers are going to, that means the front cover, the inside front, mm-hmm. the inside back, and the back cover is all one printing piece, and it's done ahead of time when the rest of the magazine.
It goes a week before the rest of the magazine.
A week before the rest of the magazine. It's going out probably tomorrow once we get it all done. So
I really liked it. I like the cover this year.
Yeah.
This can't say anything, but I like the cover.
No, you can't say anything.
I got to be
no,
quiet.
It's a surprise. That's for sure. Let's see. All right, let's get Doug up here.
They're trying to get a topic.
I know. I'm not worried about it. Let's get him up here. Oh, shotgun. Okay, shotguns. Doug, are you with me? Good morning.
Hello.
What's up?
Yeah, look, powder loads for shotgun shells. Years ago, they used to be a high brass, a low brass, and even maybe a medium brass.
Uh-huh.
And, but the... Do they still have that today?
Yeah, sure do. Mostly in your shotgun sports loads, like your trap and skeet loads. Those are your low brass. You can still get some low brass for doves and that type of thing. They still make some game loads in the low brass. But yeah, they still have low brass and high brass. They sure do. Your high brass is a little more powerful because, and the brass is higher because of the amount of shot and that type of thing for strength is what they use.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can. Situation where I was talking to somebody and they had a box of shells and they look like they were low brass.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him about it. He said he didn't really know.
Yeah,
because he had just bought them.
Yeah, your low brass, you're going to find more low brass in a 2 3/4 inch shell. Most of your 3 inch and 3.5 inch are going to be high brass shells.
I see.
You know.
Well, anyway, I guess he didn't ask the salesman.
Right, right. Well, it depends on what you're after. I mean, they're so specialized right now. For example, this Dove and Clay load that we're talking about from Clyde Sports Shop.
Uh-huh.
Guys are using it 7.5, number 7.5 shot, number 8 shot. They're using it for sporting clays and trap and skeet, but it's also a great load for doves. I mean, that's what trap and skeet and sporting clays helps you develop your skills for flying birds.
I see.
You know,
well, look, Alan, one more thing. So high and low brass are still available, say, in 12 gauge?
Yes, they are.
And how about a medium load? Is it still
Don't think there's any such thing as
just
a medium brass.
High and low.
Yes, sir. Okay?
Right, thank you much.
Thanks, Doug.
Bye.
Yep, see ya. All right, folks. Well, that's a good way to end.